We eavesdrop on Jesus speaking to his disciples today, something really poignant and really clear. He's trying to give, in my opinion, is probably one of the most important lessons that any of us back then or today as disciples can learn. It's the great lesson that the two best teachers in life are love and suffering. The two best teachers in life are love and suffering. Yet they miss the point. Jesus gives up his life out of love and suffers. The disciples, all they want to know is who's the greatest. Who's going to be the next Archbishop of Jerusalem or whatever it is? They're really riveted on power and on position. They forget the fact that Jesus, who is ultimately in charge, is teaching them another way to take a look at power. But notice in Mark's gospel, anytime he brings his disciples into the house, and Mark is very clear about that today, after they have that conversation on the road, he said, let's come into the house, almost come into the church, come into a synagogue. And he's going to further explicate what it means, never wanting to embarrass them out there on the road. And so once they get into the house, Jesus uses the best example he could about this lesson of love and suffering. He tells them that they need to become like little children. And I think we can all admit that kids get it, don't they? They believe because their lives depend on it. Developmentally, we come into the world perhaps as curious scientists. We're always looking at things, we're trying to figure what's going on. But as children, we tend to believe. Notice what little kids do. They even get cranky, taciturn old people to go goo-goo and gaga over them, even though they perhaps are not in good moods. I remember one time at Camp Trinity, the annual experience of many parishioners here, going out into the woods, into the beauty of nature to take a retreat. I had a question and answer period with the fifth graders. The title of this Q&A was Everything You Always Wanted to Ask a Priest But Were Afraid to Ask. The first question I received, have you ever been kissed? Does anyone want to know? The second question, have you ever fallen asleep during Mass? Yes, during my homilies. No. But again, kids really know they get it. Jesus says, whoever welcomes a child for my sake welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes not me, but the one who sent me. Four times in that short text, the word welcome is used. Welcome is the key to the gospel. Jesus tells us to welcome a child because, unlike adults, a child has nothing to give us. In other words, a child is powerless in the best sense. And Jesus identifies with the child. He says, I too, though I am your Lord and Master, am powerless. A child is a great example. They know how to live in rhythm with their emotions. They know when to laugh and when to cry. A wise sage said one time that any man or woman who cannot cry is a savage, and an old man or woman who cannot laugh is a fool. What is really the ultimate form of welcome and hospitality? I did a little Google search just to come up with what hospitality can mean, and I love this one. It's an Irish version. It's called the Urban Shaman, and it tells us about hospitality in Ireland. You go to someone's house, there's a woman who says, do you want a cup of tea? You say, no, thank you. You're really just fine. The woman says, are you sure? You say, of course you're sure, really. You don't need a thing. Except they pronounce it ting. You don't need a ting. She says, well, I was going to get myself some tea anyway, so it wouldn't be any trouble. You say, well, if you're going to go into the kitchen and make all the trouble, I'll have something and all the stuff. Then you go through the whole thing all over again until you both upend in the kitchen drinking tea and chatting. In America, someone asks if you want a cup of tea, you say no, and you don't get any damn tea. Hospitality Hospitality. Here is haiku. In the cherry blossom shade, there's no such thing as a stranger. There's no hospitality like understanding. In the Bible, it says, do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing so, some have entertained angels without knowing it. And finally, from Henry Nouwen, a great spiritual writer of the 20th century, he says this in his book, Reaching Out. Hospitality means primarily the creation of free space where the stranger can enter and become a friend instead of an enemy. Hospitality is not to change people, but to offer them space where change can take place. It's not to bring men and women over to our side, but to offer freedom, not disturbed by dividing lines. In other words, hospitality is that great Christian virtue that Jesus expresses in the Gospels that simply says to the other, I really like you as you are, not as I want you to be. But I'm liking you as you are, faults, foibles, good points, all of it together. Imagine living in a world of radical hospitality. Imagine waking up every morning, whether it's with a spouse, a friend, whomever, to say, I'm so glad you made it through another night just so you can be alive today and be you, because the world really needs it. Those kinds of affirmation statements are far and few between at times. We don't talk like that to one another. But maybe it would be a good thing. Actually, if someone said that to me, I'd think they were up to something. But again, ultimately, being hospitable is what gives us spiritual power. And spiritual power is that uncanny ability, in the face of it all, to simply welcome the stranger. We see so many examples of that right now in Western Europe. People reticent, and people also open to take in the stranger. Pope Francis just this past week was upset that priests and nuns who live in convents and monasteries and rectories all around Europe, some of them were not opening up their doors after he told them to do so. So what was his response? To tell the governments to take away their tax-exempt status. All I can say is, wow. What's he going to say to us this week? I don't know if you've heard, but he is coming to our country this week. Hospitality undergirds all of this. In the epistle from James today, we hear that there are people who know peace and joy and kindness and humor. And James says something so powerful. He says, the harvest of justice is sown in peace by those who cultivate peace. Now think of that. What is one of the best gifts that we can receive or give to others? I would suggest it's the gift of inner peace. There's nothing like it. When we're in the presence of a woman or a man who has the gift of inner peace, it is a huge tonic, isn't it? It deflates anxiety. There's nothing like it in the world. And James suggests that that peace is the beginning of justice. There are the people who are the little ones that Jesus talks about, people who are not bitter, even though they've been burned. There are people who know that, in the words of Gandhi, that an eye for an eye mentality makes everyone blind. There are people we know that we want to go up to and shake and ask them to rub off on us because they just seem to live life so well. And if you know someone like that, go up this week and shake that person. There are people that Jesus puts in our midst so that we can learn from them. Are we looking? Children are a primary example. Pope Francis talks about the throwaway society. And I think the gospel and the letter of James underscore that today. There's no one that comes across our purview that can't teach us a valuable lesson. Out there in the world, in the zip code where we live, Jesus wants us to welcome the stranger and the other. And in doing so, we welcome him. May God be praised.